Our second speaker is Annie Lord Gaylor. She lives right here in Madison, and she co-founded the Freedom From Religion Foundation with her mother in 1976. She's the author of three books, Woe to Women, The Bible Tells Me Shouldn't So, Betrayal of Trust, Clergy Abuse of Children, and Women Without Superstition, No Gods, No Masters. She's the current co-president of the FFRF with Dan Barker. Since 2004, they have been co-president, and she will be speaking on the all-important issue of separation of church and state. If you want to give it up for Annie Lord Gaylor.
Sam Erickson. He's going to be one of our interns this summer, by the way, and all the students who put this on. And I was at the first Free Thought Festival 3 years ago, and it's very impressive. Now, tomorrow is Palm Sunday, and I wonder how many of you know the significance of that. The pastors will be there with their palms out. Anyway, I was asked to talk about separation of church and state. The Freedom From Religion Foundation does two things. We promote non-theism, and we're the nation's largest association now of atheists and agnostics and freethinkers, over 20,000. And so we're very active in that, but we also work hard as a state church watchdog to keep religion out of government. And I do like to say it's kind of the best of times to be a freethinker. There have never been more of us. 30% of students, and we're now seeing that figure, Pew is showing that figure nationwide, identified as non-religious, up to 30%. So that's a major change. And the flowering of free thought everywhere, the student clubs, the Secular Student Alliance, what we're seeing is really astounding and amazing. But on the other side, it's the worst of times for separation of church and state. In terms of the very chilling effect of our current Supreme Court. So there's a lot of good state church precedent, but there are a great many threats to the First Amendment today. And to do a little overview on free thought and the First Amendment, I wanted to play a little short message that has broadcast hundreds of times on public TV stations several years ago, Freedom From Religion Foundation produced this segment.
Free thought, the use of reason rather than faith, tradition, or authority, to form opinions on religion. More wars have been waged, more people killed in the name of religion than by any other institutional force in human history. So, with such wildly contrasting beliefs in this country, why aren't we at each other's throats? Here's why. It's our Constitution, and its very core of freedom from religion. Our country was founded in part by refugees seeking freedom, seeking to escape centuries of religious persecutions, holy inquisitions, witch hunts.
The United States of America was the first nation where our founders did not claim a pipeline to a divinity. It was a revolutionary act that they created a secular and entirely godless constitution whose only references to religion are exclusionary. That there should be no religious test for public office. The founders were aware of the inquisitions and pogroms and the religious wars and tears in Europe and the persecution in many of the individual colonies, and they wanted no part of that in our new government. So they erected what Thomas Jefferson called a wall of separation between church and state, and that protects all of us. It has prevented the bloodshed and warfare that we see in so many parts of the world where religion is involved in government.
The church worked hard at it, night and day, for 9 centuries, and imprisoned, tortured, hanged, and burned whole hordes and armies and leeches, and washed the world clean of their foul blood. Then it was discovered there was no such thing as witches, and never had been. One doesn't know whether to laugh or cry.
Once government gets behind religion, then whose religion? somebody is going to get persecuted. Somebody is turned into the insider, and someone becomes the outsider based on their personal religious convictions or lack of religious convictions. And our founders wanted no part of religion and government because they knew it was divisive.
There are some believers who don't see the difference between neutrality and hostility. They think efforts of groups like ours to keep the government neutral are actually a hostile act against their faith. When we are not asking for the government to be pro-atheist either, if the government stays neutral, the government stays secular, then everybody's an insider, nobody's an outsider.
Freedom from religion is what we all value so highly. Privately, I can believe or disbelieve whatever I want.
There's always been this notion in our culture that, that religiosity is somehow equated with morality. Of course, that's false. I think people just aren't aware of the fact that actually atheists and agnostics and secular humanists are underrepresented in immigration prisons. They're less than 0.5%. And in the states in the United States that have the highest percentage of non-religious people actually have the lowest amount of crime rates, the lowest murder rates, the lowest poverty rates, and the countries around the world, especially democracies that have the highest degrees of secular people, are also doing the best.
When you think about social and moral progress, it's usually made by rebellious people, people who break the mold, people who are rejecting the dogma. Most progress is made by people who are free thinkers. To some degree, they are challenging the status quo. The abolition of slavery was led by people who were either religious liberals or religious heretics. In fact, during the 1800s, the word infidel was a synonym for abolitionist. So you can name all sorts of progress made through history by people who tend to be either very liberal or free-thinking individuals. Otherwise, how is progress going to be made?
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. It's brilliant. There's a reason it's the First Amendment.
So, well, that's a five-minute overview, and that was a benign... You know, it's very tricky to get your message on public TV, so that made it. And I wanted to talk a little bit about specifically the Godless Constitution as referenced. Of course, you know there's no Jesus, no God, no Ten Commandments in the Constitution. The references to religion are all exclusionary. The presidential oath is given in toto. There is no put your hand on a Bible, no so help me God. And there was significantly no prayer at the Constitutional Convention, which went on for 4 months. And it was acrimonious, and they were ready to give up. And at one point, Benjamin Franklin said, maybe we should pray. And his own notes record, there was embarrassment, there was 3 or 4 maybe agreed, and they adjourned for the day. They never prayed during the Constitutional Convention, which shows intent. And then, of course, they realized, gee, we have a little bit of a missing element in our Constitution. We need a Bill of Rights. We got that First Amendment. And we got an explanation for what the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment means, you know, regarding Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. And that was very handily given to us, excuse me, by Thomas Jefferson, who, when he was president, was working on New Year's, 1802. They used to work on New Year's Day, and he was answering a letter from the Baptists of Danbury, Connecticut, about what the Establishment Clause meant. And he checked the wording with his attorney general. He knew what he was writing was making law when he wrote that the First Amendment builds a wall of separation between church and state. That is a metaphor to explain a legal principle. And here's an ad this is a banner that is going to be put up next weekend at Daly Plaza in Chicago, which has been the site for 30 years of acrimony over religion because religionists have insisted on putting up their displays. And it's been declared a public forum at Christmas time, and now we find out that the Catholics will be there with a 12-foot Jesus. And our chapter in Chicago wanted to take the high road and talk about separation of church and state. So this will be a nearly 12-foot banner, keep state and church separate, and quoting the Treaty of Tripoli that was signed by President John Adams, that the government is not in any sense founded on the Christian religion. And on the other side, we're going to have this 12-foot banner in Reason We Trust, and Jefferson's words question with boldness even the existence of a God. And not to belabor the point, but some of you may have heard of Hobby Lobby. We have been battling them for a long time, and I always felt that they were rather insidious, because they started placing these misinformation, disinformation, Christian right, full-page ads. I think they started about 2009 or maybe 2007. They have a lot of money, and they put these full-page ads every July 4th, distorting the history of our country, promoting theocracy. The shorter ad there, In a God We Trust, is one of their July 4th ads. And so this year we did our own. You can see the one that ran in the New York Times, and very good response. And we ran it in we were supposed to run it in 25 cities, and the Daily Oklahoman was one of the newspapers we chose because Hobby Lobby is based in Oklahoma City. And guess where we got censored? And so there's the ad that ran last summer. That's Katie Daniels. Some of you may have seen her, one of our staff members, last night. And she's holding their ad, and I'm holding our ad. And a close-up here, we quoted Thomas Paine, who named our country, who fomented the revolution, who wrote The Age of Reason. In that book, he said, whenever we read the obscene stories, the voluptuous debaucheries, the cruel and torturous executions, the unrelenting vindictiveness with which more than half the Bible is filled, it would be more consistent that we call it the word of a demon than a word of a God. It is a history of wickedness that has served to corrupt and brutalize. Take that, Hobby Lobby. Benjamin Franklin, although he wanted to pray, he was a deist who believed in the secular government, and he said, when a religion is good, I conceive it will support itself. And when it does not support itself, and God does not take care to support it, so that its professors are obliged to call for the help of the civil power, 'tis a sign, I apprehend, of its being a bad one. And George Washington, who never took communion and did not pray at Valley Forge, wrote, religious controversies are always productive of more acrimony and irreconcilable hatreds than those which spring from any other cause. Celebrating our godless constitution, and then we had, there's John Adams with the Treaty of Tripoli, Jefferson with question with boldness, even the existence of a God. And then the primary architect of our constitution and Bill of Rights, and that would be the man our city is named for, James Madison. During almost 15 centuries, has the legal establishment of Christianity been on trial? What has been its fruits, more or less in all places? Pride and indolence in the clergy, ignorance and servility in the laity, and in both superstition, bigotry, and persecution. They chose a secular motto. It was a distinguished committee of Benjamin Franklin, Adams, and Jefferson, who came up with the Latin phrase, e pluribus unum, which basically means from many come one, or many united together into one. And that is one of our mottos. It was the primary motto. Benjamin Franklin actually suggested the motto, mind your business. And that actually was on some pennies. I think they should bring that one back. Now, I'm going to fast forward from those halcyon days of at least some secular respect to one of the first little entanglements that started to cause problems in our country. And this, what you're looking at, is a 2-cent piece that says, In God We Trust, 1864. So when you hear people say, God's always been on our money, it's not true. A Baptist minister wrote the U.S. Secretary of Treasury in 61 during the Civil War, suggesting that we should have a religious motto to relieve us from the ignominy of heathenism. Talk about no secular purpose. And they lobbied, and they finally got it on toward the end of the Civil War. And it was very gradually introduced to other coins, off and on, until probably about 1938, Coin World estimates that it was on all the money. But it was not on most of the currency. It was not on most of the coins through at least half of this country's history. And there was still very ardent support for secularism. That's President Ulysses S. Grant. And he made a famous speech as president in Des Moines, Iowa, by the way. Keep the church and the state forever separate. Leave religion to the family altar and the church. There were a series of state cases to keep religion out of the schools toward the end of the 19th century. And Wisconsin had one of them, but there was one in Illinois. They were all over. That's a picture of the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. And at the 19th century, the real agitators for keeping religion out of the public schools and out of government were, do you want to make a guess, which minority? Did I hear Catholics? Yes, you're right. It was Roman Catholics, who are not big supporters of separation of church and state today, but they were the minority, and they were encountering King James versions of the Bible in public schools and Bible reading in public schools, and they didn't like that, so of course they went to court. Actually, the bishops wanted, they used that to try to demand parochial education. They wanted a separate school system funded by the public, which is what you were getting in Canada. And we've refused, but they're really getting what they want now with the voucher encroachments. But anyway, they were the early litigators against Bibles in public schools. And a family in Edgerton, Wisconsin, took this famous case, Weiss versus District Board. And there is this lovely language, we still use it, to explain why we need to keep religion out of schools and government. There is no such source and cause of strife, quarrel, fights, malignant opposition, persecution and war, and all evil in the state as religion. Let it once enter our civil affairs, our government would soon be destroyed. Let it once enter our common schools, they would be destroyed. This is a Wisconsin State Supreme Court justice in 1890. This isn't the Freedom from Religion Foundation. In 1983, we had the introduction of the secular and godless Pledge of Allegiance written by a liberal clergyman. There's no God there. Whole generations grew up reciting a secular pledge. And I'm going to fast forward to the 1950s. And here's the black eye on Wisconsin. We sent Joe McCarthy to the U.S. Senate. And Joe Must Go, that was one of the many protest buttons in part led by the Capital Times when it used to be a paper newspaper. And in the McCarthy era, after World War II, during the Red Scare, we saw so many incursions of religion in Congress and in our government, creating a lot of symbolic violations that, in a sense, have been more harmful than even the expenditure of money for religion. And I'm going to go through a couple of them. And first, I should explain this photograph. This is Billy Graham. I'm assuming some of you know who he is. He's still alive, and he was the big evangelist. This is a picture of him. It's not photoshopped in Times Square. And we recently reprinted it. One of our members knew of this photo that originally appeared in Time. So he was checking out the porn. But in 1952, he went to the steps of the Capitol for 6 weeks, held tent show revivals, and he lobbied Congress and said, I want to see all of the legislators on their knees to Jesus in prayer, and what you really must do is enact a national day of prayer. And they immediately, I think it was only a month or less, 3 weeks, they did it. They passed it in Congress, and it's a law that requires the president to enact a national day of prayer every year. It used to be roving, and then in the 80s they had another law, and it's now the first Thursday in May. And more about that later. Then we got the tampering with our secular pledge under God, ironically dividing one nation indivisible. And then at the top, you'll see the clean dollar bill. No God there. On the bottom, starting in 1957, In God We Trust. And Congress first ordered In God We Trust on all the money in 55. It took a couple years to get it on the bills. And then in 1956, adopted In God We Trust as a second motto. We have not done away with the first. They're both still on the money. And so it's kind of ironic. I'm going to reveal my age. I was born in 55, in the middle of this. And I have spent most of my life trying to undo these bad precedents, these legal violations from the 1950s. And just to show you, that's my twin brother and me. We didn't know what we were in for. And in fact, there was prayer in school when I was in kindergarten. I had no idea. I didn't even know what it meant. My parents didn't realize it. There was a decision that came down that stopped it. I was reciting a Pledge of Allegiance with God in it. My parents had no idea. I remember how shocked my mother was when I recited it for her one day. So these violations were very insidious. And in the 60s, we got the civil rights movement, the women's movement, the anti-war movement. My mother, in the end of the late 60s, became very active in trying to work to decriminalize and legalize abortion. We had up to 100,000 women being maimed and dying a year from illegal abortion in this country when you couldn't get it. Birth control was hard to get. It was a big civil rights issue for women, and in our very Roman Catholic state, her eyes were opened, and mine, as I followed her around in junior high school, to the control, the danger of control of our laws by religion. We knew what we were fighting on abortion rights and birth control was the organized religious lobby. And it could have been some other issue, but that's what opened our eyes. And she started the first group to legalize abortion in Wisconsin. And The Abortion is a Blessing is a book that she wrote after that battle was won. And there we are picketing the bishops downtown in Madison. This picture of my mother on the phone is because she has Atheists Do Start Charities, and she's run the longest lived abortion rights charity in the country. At 87, she's still glued to the phone, taking calls from indigent women who cannot get abortions paid for under public funding because of the Roman Catholic Church and the fundamentalists who have cut it off from public funding. So it's still an issue. And we founded the Freedom From Religion Foundation. I was a college student. My mother was a feminist activist back in 1976 when we encountered religion at the city council. They were praying, and also at the Dane County Board. And it took about a year, but we stopped it. And it's still a huge issue around the country, government prayer. And this is just a picture from the Phil Donahue show. And I don't know how many of you younger people know who he was, but he could make you. He was the biggest talk show host on daytime TV. And what was really nice about the Donahue show was after he did the interview, he would always put the name and address of the group that you were with, so he didn't get the mail. People used to write things down. They didn't have the internet. You had to call the library. It was hard to find us. And so it was a huge break for us. And here's just, you know, we did things all the time. There was a great deal of publicity about the formation of the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And that my mother in the darker suit, that's a picture of her at the post office downtown. If you ever go there, you might recognize that. They were putting cancellations for a Roman Catholic group with religious wording on your mail, which is in violation of federal postal regulations, and we wrote them, telling them not to do it, and they wouldn't stop. So that was the Freedom From Religion Foundation's first lawsuit, and it was settled quickly. And then there's a picture of me on Bascom Hill. When I was a sophomore, I became aware that I was going to have to graduate and be prayed at, which I'd hated when I was in high school and I protested it. They were bringing in a Protestant minister and a Roman Catholic priest at our secular graduations, and so I went to the senior class officers, and there were four of them, and they made my little pitch that it was very inappropriate for a public university to have prayer at our graduation ceremonies, and it was also very rude to the many foreign students and the diversity of students. And they nodded their heads. I had lucked out a room full of agnostics and atheists, and they agreed with me, and they took it to the chancellor, who it turned out was a closet agnostic. He agreed with me. I think we did it in a month. It was a, you know, that's the kind of thing you fight a lawsuit about. And the State Journal tried to cause some trouble by surveying the students at the time, and they found out that most of them, more than half of them, agreed that there should not be prayer. So we stopped. I stopped religion. That was 130-something year abuse at a top 10 university at the commencements. And we still get a lot of complaints around the country about religion at commencements in public universities. That's just more history. That's Steven Weinberg, the physicist, the Nobel laureate physicist, with my mother toward that when she was about ready to retire. He was the person who said, good people will do good things and bad people will do bad things, but for good people to do bad things, that takes religion. And he was FFRF's first recipient of our Emperor Has No Clothes Award for public figures who make known their dissent from religion. And then I want to introduce, we have an important element at the Freedom From Religion Foundation, a man joined our staff, and this is when I first met Dan Barker, just before going on the Oprah Winfrey Show, and this is just a little snippet.
My two guests this morning are a mother and daughter team who just opened a telephone hotline for anyone who's trying to kick religion and Gaylor and Annie Laurie Gaylor.
I think a lot of people are trying to kick religion because religion is it's kind of an addiction, it's kind of dependent on people, and they need something to
change that was providing the service.
A support service for people who have rejected religion. That's right.
The organization, Freedom From Religion Foundation, kind of an umbrella organization. We call the members mostly free thinkers. They call themselves atheists or agnostics.
You don't believe in God or a greater power or a power greater than yourself, so what do you believe? Like, how did you get here?
Well, my life is free from religion. It's not a negative thing, it's a positive thing.
It is positive in what way, Tom?
Because I don't believe in any supernatural deity, particularly a male supernatural deity, that is authoritarian and telling us what to do. And if we don't do what is supposed to go to hell.
Joining me now is a former ordained minister of 17 years who gave up his religion, Dan Barker. What made you change your mind, Dan?
In 30 years of going to church and being a preacher, I never got to sleep in on Sunday mornings.
So we did a bus sign once that says sleep in on Sundays. Dan will be doing the debate tonight. So we have taken over 60 lawsuits to keep religion out of government. We've won at least half of them, and some of them are ongoing, about 12 of them. And this is a favorite. You wouldn't know it if you're young, but it used to be that there was a law on the books in Wisconsin that you had to worship between particular hours on Good Friday. It was mandated. And everything closed, and the Union Memorial Library closed, and the libraries closed downtown, and the city, and the state government, and we got so many complaints, and we finally were able to round up. These are all the plaintiffs in the lawsuit, state workers and professors and things, and we overturned that darn law. And this sign may be up at the state capitol next week. We found out that the focus on the family people who need to focus on their own darn family are going to be up there with an Easter display. And we happen to have this artwork to counter signs up on public property saying that Jesus died for your sins. This is just a screenshot of the dozen lawsuits that we have ongoing right now. And I do want to just show the ABC Nightly News covered the case that we had before the Supreme Court, and it was on faith-based initiatives.
Tonight, the increasingly vocal atheist movement. This past week, the Supreme Court heard arguments in a case brought by atheists who claimed the Bush administration's Office of Faith-Based Initiatives violates the separation of church and state. This is just one example of the mounting assertiveness of atheists who are arguing loudly that religion is not only false, but also a threat to civilization. Facing off outside the Supreme Court.
How sacred are you to God to your home?
The agent, a lawsuit brought by the nation's largest atheist group, the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Leader Dan Barker is a former fundamentalist preacher.
What do you preach now? Separation of state and church, and reason and kindness in place of superstition and ideologies.
But Barker and his wife, co-president Annie Laurie Gaylor, say the problem is bigger than the Bush administration and its faith-based initiatives. They see a world being torn apart by religious fundamentalists of all stripes.
But religion is the source of an incredible amount of comfort for people. It's also something that has driven people to save lives and feed people.
And it's the source of the greatest violence in the world, where people have been killed in the name of religion and for any other reason.
The atheist argument seems to be resonating right now. There's an atheist internet recruiting campaign, atheist summer camps, and several best-selling books, including Letter to a Christian Nation by Sam Harris, who says religion poses a global threat.
We have a world that has been shattered quite unnecessarily by competing religious beliefs. We have Christians against Muslims, against Jews, They're making incompatible claims on real estate in the Middle East, as though God is some kind of omniscient real estate broker and you're doling out a force of land to chose a block. People are literally dying over ancient literature.
I was speaking to an evangelical minister, leading evangelical minister yesterday, who described your movement as a firecracker going out in the forest. In other words, you're really not going to make much of a difference.
But if it's a dry forest, it can cause quite a conflagration there, can't it?
So that case, the Hine decision, when we started that lawsuit, Sandra Day O'Connor was on the court. We lost that 5-4. Kennedy didn't give us that swing. But it was not on the merits, it was standing, the right of taxpayers to sue over the creation of the White House faith-based office and at the cabinet levels. So we're still fighting that. We won about 10 cases from victories stopping funding of the faith-based initiative before that decision by the Supreme Court. And here I'll tell you what we're celebrating. In 2010, we won a very significant ruling by Judge Barbara Crabb here in federal court against the National Day of Prayer. And she said there was no more constitutional to hold a National Day of Prayer than a National Day of Blasphemy, or endorse rune magic, or encourage citizens to fast during Ramadan. She got it, and it was put into the record that there was no prayer at the Constitutional Convention, which was the actual rationale for passing the National Day of Prayer. That law was based on a big lie. And she wrote that the government cannot take sides on religion or turn believers into insiders and others into outsiders. Now, the Obama administration appealed our very firm victory to the Seventh Circuit. It's a crapshoot. We got 3 judges against us who threw us out, not on the merits, but on standing. We never fought harder on that case. We have a current victory now that we are very optimistic about. Judge Barbara Crabb, again in November, agreed with us that a 1954 act of Congress creating the parish exemption is unconstitutional. And that is this law where clergy can be paid through a housing allowance, which can be exempted from their taxable income. So to give you an idea, it's not a tax deduction. Say the clergyman earns $50,000 and they pay him part of that with a housing allowance of $20,000. He only pays taxes on $30,000. Only the clergy are given this benefit, and it's an enormous benefit for churches because tax-free income goes further, so they don't have to pay as much of a salary, and they can put more of their money into promoting, I guess, religion and government. And Dan and I are the plaintiffs. We point out that as the heads of a 501c3 educational charity, we are paid through a housing allowance that we cannot claim, and that creates our injury. But actually, it's all 501c3 educational groups are harmed in a sense, because churches only are given this. And we hope we will overturn this. This is bound for the Supreme Court, but it's going to take a while. And then I wanted to say that we have one other very hot case against the Internal Revenue Service, and that is against their failure to enforce their anti-electioneering laws, where you may know that members of, from the pulpit, ministers have been endorsing politicians, especially in the presidential elections. There's been something like 1,900 of them who've turned themselves in to the IRS, and they have done nothing. And if they don't do something, it's going to be far worse than Citizens United or this deplorable McCutcheon decision of a week ago. It will make those decisions look like child's play, because you will have money laundering through tax-exempt churches. You will have congregations treated like wards. We will have a shadow government. So it's an important case. And right now, where that is in Judge Adelman's court in Milwaukee, and we've been given standing, and now a church is intervening, and the church that's intervening is saying that they have endorsed from the pulpit, and this is their free speech rights to retain their tax exemption and be able to endorse from the pulpit. So it's turning into a big case. Now this is a picture of Michael Newdow. You saw that we got under In God We Trust on the currency and as our motto, and we've tried suing. He's tried suing. We have a case in the East Coast in appeals court on that right now. It's a hard one to crack. And I did want to say, you might see a familiar face. That's a staff picture, but in the middle is Hemet. He came for a visit, so we got a picture. But we've gone from two of us to 20,000 members. and from an all-volunteer staff to now 14 and a quarter staff members, and also five of them are attorneys. And we have sent over 1,000 letters of complaint out every year to trying to end violations without going to court. You may have worked with some of our attorneys. And we also have legal interns. And I don't know if Callie's in the room. She's done so. Callie, you might stand up. Callie was one of our interns and worked with them. So useful. So we're growing. And this is our building on North Henry and West Washington Avenue. And it's a little 1855 Gold Rush building, built during the Gold Rush. And we are so cramped and crowded, there's no room. And so we have an addition going up that should be up by the end of the summer. And so we're going very strong, just like the Free Thought Movement. And this is just a little advertisement for the student essay competitions that we offer. We have three of them. We gave over $36,000 in scholarships last year for many winners of these different essay competitions. One's for ongoing college students. We have one for grad students. And we also give student activist awards ranging from $1,000 to $5,000 a year. So we really want to encourage student activism. We partner with the Secular Student Alliance on legal issues and on campus events. And then really briefly, I was asked to go through Establishment Clause law. So this is illustrated in about 5 minutes, and then I'll be done. There was the Everson court decision of 1947 that has lovely language. No time to read all of it, but it does say neither a state nor the federal government can set up a church, aid one religion, aid all religions, or prefer one religion over another. That was the Supreme Court, the first case to incorporate the First Amendment via the 14th Amendment, meaning that the First Amendment applied to federal citizens, and the Civil War Amendment said the Bill of Rights also applies to state citizens, but it took a while to get a case in which the Supreme Court actually incorporated it, and that was 1947. And you're going to hear more about that in the film coming up, and about Vashti McCollum, who took the first case going up to the Supreme Court and the Supreme on religious instruction in the public schools and won it. And it is the precedent upon which all the other cases are built, and we invoke it every day at the Freedom From Religion Foundation. This is two cases in the 60s stopping prayer in the public schools, and Gold versus Vitale, which stopped my kindergarten prayers. And then along came Abington versus Shemp in 1963. And Ellery Shemp spoke 2 years ago at the first Free Thought Festival. And as a young man in high school, was encountering recitation of Bibles in his schools. And so he started that very important case. We have precedent against creationism in the schools, 1968, Epperson versus Arkansas struck down a state law forbidding the teaching of evolution, praise Darwin. And he's looking on benignly at the Edwards versus Aguillard case by the Supreme Court, 1987, saying you can't balance teaching of evolution by teaching creationism. That is not kosher. And then the Kitzmiller versus Dover case did not go up to the Supreme Court, but it might as well if it has that precedent, the same precedent against teaching of intelligent design. And if you haven't read that court decision, it is wonderful reading. The Supreme Court has ruled you cannot post Ten Commandments in public schools. It should be obvious why not. The First Commandment says, thou shalt have no other gods before me. And that would be very obvious why that violates the First Amendment, because under the First Amendment, you can have as many gods as you like, or any God that you like, or no God at all. Here is Wallace versus Jaffrey. Ishmael Jaffrey was FFRF's inaugural Freethinker of the Year. He had six kids in the mobile schools who were getting beaten up to and from school because he was protesting a new state law that was a stealth law for prayer in the schools under the guise of meditation, and he won that case. Lee versus Wiseman, 1992, is why you should not have had to have prayer at your high school graduations, whereas I did. And they had a Christian clergyman praying in Merrick Wiseman. This is a nominally Jewish family. They protested. And the school was so clueless that the next year they asked a Christian clergyman to come in and give the invocation. They just didn't get it.
A rabbi, I'm sorry.
They had a rabbi come in thinking that would appease the family. And so they sued and won that case before the Supreme Court. And they were our 1992 Freethinkers of the Year. And then the final case on school prayer, Santa Fe versus Doe, came down in 2000, which said, and that was taken by Roman Catholics and Mormons who were tired of Baptist prayers over the intercom at their football games in Texas And when they complained about it, they made the kids vote about it, and then they said they would be student-led and student-initiated, and the students were reading the prayers over the intercom, which is really worse because that's peer pressure. The Supreme Court said no. The Supreme Court has also let stand two decisions against Gideon Bible distribution in the public schools. And then there's some other positive, there's a lot of bad precedent, but there's some other very positive Supreme Court decisions. Roy Torcaso, who his boss asked him to become a notary public, and he encountered a religious test for public office, which is forbidden under our Constitution, and he had to take it all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court and won unanimously in 1961, and he was one of our officers. Elliot Welsh was drafted and was told that as an atheist, he could not be a conscientious objector. He took it all the way up to the Supreme Court and won that in 1970. And here's a picture of him with his little son when he was suing over the Boy Scouts. His little boy was given a flyer by his first grade teacher to come back to school that night and come to the Cub Scouts. And when they got to the auditorium, Elliot was told he had to sign a declaration of religious sentiments. And when he couldn't, his little boy was told you were unwelcome, and he left crying. And he took that lawsuit up to the Seventh Circuit under the Civil Rights Act, unfortunately lost. And the Boy Scouts are still discriminating against atheists. This is Alton Lemon. He took Lemon versus Kurtzman, and it's not the Lemon Law, it's the Lemon Test. It is still good law, even though Justice Scalia wants to overturn it. It says that the government action violates the Establishment Clause unless it has a significant secular, not religious purpose. If it doesn't have the primary effect of advancing or inhibiting religion, and if it doesn't foster excessive entanglement between government and religion. This is our friend Ernie Chambers. He is a state senator in Nebraska. They have a unicameral branch. They only have a Senate. And they were paying a chaplain to lead prayer. So he took it up to the Supreme Court in 1984. Unfortunately, he lost. It was a very bad decision. But he had a moral victory in that he went back to his Senate and was able to persuade them to get rid of the chaplain and stop praying. And he's introduced legislation, they term limited him out, but he's back, and he's introduced legislation to tax churches, and he's really a great person. And I bring him up because pending before the Supreme Court is the Town of Greece versus Galloway and Stevens case, and you may have heard they're going to make a decision by June about the constitutionality of Christian prayer in cities. And Linda Stevens is an FFRF member. She's an atheist. Susan Galloway is Jewish. And they're both heroines for taking this case. And the other big case is Hobby Lobby, which is trying to dictate its personal religious views upon its legion of women employees and saying it has a religious, it has a religious conscience. You know how Citizens United said that corporations are people? Hobby Lobby is trying to say that corporations are people with souls, and that their rights of conscience trump the rights of conscience of their employees. And Mr. Green, or whatever his name is, who runs Hobby Lobby, doesn't approve of some forms of contraception and thinks he can actually bar his women employees from using that contraception because he wants an exemption from the Obamacare's contraceptive mandate. So as this cartoon says, basically he's saying, I'm a religion, I don't have to obey the law. This is a huge case. We had an amicus brief before it, written by Marcy Hamilton, who's a very distinguished civil libertarian attorney, and SNAP and some other victims' rights groups joined us in that case. To conclude, I'd like to encourage all of you to make a fuss and love your First Amendment when you encounter a violation of the separation between church and state, because one person really can make a difference. And to never let a Christian right lie go unchallenged and uncorrected, which is what a lot of our litigation is about these days, you know, like the National Day of Prayer. And these Christian nation lies, really, the big lie, really is a very good strategy, and it's been so harmful. Whole generations of people have grown up thinking our government is based on God. And of course, we want to keep religious doctrine out of our laws. And I just want to end with a totally separate issue of follow-up where Hemet was talking about coming out of the closet and what you can do in social network. We have billboards where people have their faces and they're identified as non-believers in their own slogans. But you can also do a virtual billboard at our website at ffrf.org/out. You can choose your own slogan and color and font and your own appellation. It's really fun. There's my mother's, nothing fails like prayer. We have thousands of these up at our website, and we're going to be launching a video out of the closet campaign on via YouTube, I hope, within the month, that we hope you'll participate in. And it's important to come out of the closet because atheists are still at the bottom of the social totem pole. Researchers at University of Minnesota have shown that every other outgroup has made progress, blacks and gays, even women, Muslims, Arabs, but the public opinion hasn't changed on atheists, and Penny Edgell told me she thought that's because many people have never knowingly met an atheist. They have met them. Dan had never met an atheist until he was on the Oprah Winfrey Show. We were the first atheists he'd ever met, for example. He had met them, but he didn't know it. So coming out of the closet is very, very crucial. And I just want to end with our state motto, Forward. This Forward statue you may recognize on State Street, but this is a different venue, those of you who are young. Forward used to be on the North Hamilton side of the Capitol, and all of the women got together for the World Columbia Exposition in 1893 and found women sculptors to make a statue embodying their state motto. We have a wonderful state motto, Forward. This was done by Jean Minor, and it was done in copper repoussé like the Statue of Liberty. And Governor Tommy Thompson, 20 years ago, decided that he wanted to move her into the basement. And this picture's from 20 years ago. I just wanted to end by saying that once in a while, atheists can be on popular campaigns. This is the one popular thing my mother and I really got involved in locally, Saving Forward. And she's now on the State Street side overlooking all the protesters. But Forward is also a free-thinking motto. It's part of the Enlightenment. We are part of the Enlightenment. And I think it's crucial to see students becoming active. You know, you are our future, and freedom does depend on free thinkers. Thank you.
Yeah, you got time. Fine.
We can do like 5-10 minutes of Q&A if you guys want to. I'll pass on like maybe 2 or 3 questions.
Hi, Mr. Kerzer from Oregon. The question I have is it seems like sometimes like it's an argument for the authority, like one of our things like the funding bodies of the Constitution. Is it really more important what we think it should be, what the law should be, not what we should be?
Oh, okay. Yeah, could everyone hear that? Is this argument by authority to invoke the First Amendment? No, I don't think so. Because we're not, I mean, Scalia thinks that the Constitution is a dead letter, like the Bible is a dead letter. It's in writing here, and we can't deviate from it, and we can only do what we think they would have done back in 1797, whenever the Constitution was adopted. And no, I mean, I don't believe that either. The Constitution is a living document, and it could be amended. If the First Amendment was bad, we could get rid of it, but it's good. They had an original American notion to keep religion out of government, and we are a nation built on laws and on constitutional laws. So the work of the Freedom From Religion Foundation is to buttress the law that is good, to try to go back to it, to have the pendulum swing back to a time when the separation of church and state was honored. But it's always based on reason, not based on authority.
Thank you, Mary Gordon.